tuberculosis is an AIDS-defining illness. So when I had TB, technically speaking, I had AIDS. Because you don't actually have any disease called AIDS. AIDS is a collection of diseases, syndrome of diseases. They don't have to attack you all at once. So if you have TB and you're HIV positive in Africa, and I think in many other parts of the world, that's an AIDS-defining illness. And I think that's according to WHO as well.
At the time of your HIV diagnosis back in 1990, what were the constraints of divulging your condition and the consequences that it placed on your life beyond the actual health threats that it posed?
The major thing was that although HIV was in the news, there was not one single person who was known to have it. So when I then said it publicly, it was seen as if I am the only one in the country who was infected with it. And of course, that meant all the blame that comes with the disease, all the stigma and so on was all focused on me. So that was the challenge.
Was it a shock to learn that you had contracted tuberculosis on top of your HIV condition in 1997?
Yes. And at the time, my knowledge was still limited about tuberculosis, so that I saw TB basically as full-blown AIDS. And because of the lack of knowledge that you could actually cure TB even if you are HIV positive, made things look very gloomy. But in some way, living with HIV, I always knew that I was going to be attacked by something that was going to take my life anyway.
Well, what was the first thing you tried to do after you learned that you had tuberculosis to try to recover?
Well, I'd seen two of my brothers die from the disease, and so I had a fair knowledge of how it looked like. And my young brother, Dan, who later on died in 2003, had TB the previous year in 1996. So when I went to the hospital to look for help, they did the usual test, the sputum test and the chest x-ray. And a week later, they told me they didn't find TB and they put me on a long period of antibiotics. They gave me 56 tablets of an antibiotic called chlorofenico, and I was supposed to take this over a month. But when I took the drugs for 2 days, there was no improvement whatsoever. And my young brother, who had just completed his TB treatment successfully, told me that all these signs that you are having, like night sweats and pain in the chest and fatigue and lack of appetite, he said, that's exactly what I had. I'm sure this is tuberculosis. And he even suggested, he says, look, I'm left with the drugs that I was taking. Because in Zambia at the time, there was a lot of problems accessing drugs, such that sometimes a person with tuberculosis would look in several places to find the drugs and they end up having more than they need. So my brother was in that kind of situation. You know, he had more drugs than he needed. So even after I completed, there were leftovers. And I started taking them. And within a week, my symptoms started to subside. But because the drugs were not enough, I went to the hospital and they didn't have the drugs either. But there was a colonel in the Zambian army who had gone to South Africa to buy TB drugs for the soldiers. And she knew me and she gave me a full dose of the drugs. And that's how I continued to take the medicine and got cured.
What a remarkable series of circumstances that gave you the experience to be able to fight off the disease. Now, four of your brothers had contracted tuberculosis. Do you think that it stemmed from environmental conditions or more from some sort of genetic predisposition?
No. When I tell people about what has happened to my family, they often think there could be something unique about us. But actually, if other people in the neighborhood had the same chance to talk to you, you would have a whole queue of people telling you more or less the same story that I tell the world. Some of them, they just feel constrained because they are not open enough. But within the neighborhood that I grew up, there was a time when there were just widows around because the husband died from tuberculosis. And a friend of mine, Charles, had 9 brothers and 1 sister. And now there are only 2 brothers remaining. Himself included, they all died, including the sister died. There are only 2 brothers remaining. That's a very common story back home. You know, TB is by far the largest killer of people living with HIV. And also, if you included other AIDS-related illnesses, it's just unbelievable.
I just wanted to get to the root of what you think is the reason behind the preponderance of tuberculosis in Zambia. What are the environmental conditions in African countries that promote tuberculosis thriving in those areas?
No doubt, poverty. Poverty is one of them. HIV is another. So the combination of poverty and HIV, just like a sure thing for TB to thrive. For instance, at the moment, we talk about tools like new drugs to treat TB, which on its own is a preventive way, and then new diagnostics and a vaccine, an effective vaccine. But another way would be to improve the living conditions of people. But then when you think of that and you think of the numbers involved, it looks like a tall one, you know, like to have everybody in Zambia who is poor and like 70-80% of the people live under $1, to lift them to a standard where everyone has ventilation in the house and clean water and a meal on the table when they need it. Personally, I feel that would be like a real, real big challenge. If it's more challenging than finding a vaccine, I guess.
Lifting the poverty.
Yeah, because there was TB in all these developed countries like the US and Canada and so on. And to a large extent, the cases of TB were reduced drastically, so much so that when I talk about TB often in developed countries, they say, oh, we thought this is a thing of the past. You know, they don't know it's still a global problem. And they sorted out that by mainly improving the living conditions of the population.
Now, with some two-thirds of all Zambians who have tuberculosis also being HIV positive, what do you recommend as the best way to fight off a greater weakening of your immune system?
Ideally, if every person who has HIV could access antiretrovirals to strengthen their immunity, at least there's a chance that you may not develop ordinary TB. Although, lately, even people who are on antiretrovirals are still getting mild drug resistance TB and XDR. Some of the people who, XDR is the extensively drug resistance TB. Some of the patients who died in South Africa were actually on antiretrovirals and yet they died from tuberculosis. So I think the best way to sort out the problem of TB is to find, obviously, better tools. Like one of the best way would be to find a vaccine, obviously, and that would be like the best one. Because then if you find a vaccine, there would be no need of looking for diagnostics or looking for better drugs. But while they're still searching for a vaccine, there should be more support for research to find better diagnostics. Like I have said, you know, they tested me and they said I didn't have it. My brother in marriage, this guy and I, we married sisters. And he had TB, but they couldn't find it at the hospital. 3 months after he had died, we learned that they had found it after doing culture. And what use is that? So the lack of proper diagnostics, the lack of a vaccine, and if you add that even the drugs that I was taking, the ordinary TB drugs, if they find it, you have to take it from 6 to 8 months. In my case, I took it for 9 months because I just wanted to be very sure that it's gone.
Are you confident that with the new tools that are getting closer and closer to finding a vaccine for tuberculosis, that the vaccine and other drugs will be readily available to people in Zambia to fight against TB?
Yeah, I am. A good example is the AIDS drug. In the late 80s and early 90s, if someone had AIDS in Zambia, it was basically a death sentence if they were HIV positive. And in many ways, it was almost like impossible to think drugs that were then costing around $10,000 per person per year here in the U.S. could even reach people in Zambia. Zambia's health budget per person per year is less than $18. But because of the activism and right thinking by many, many people, almost everyone who needs antiretrovirals in Zambia can access them, except that we have obstacles such as a lack of human resource to dispense these drugs and administer them, as well as logistical things like the infrastructure to reach the villages are not there. But if you live in Lusaka, or in one of the large towns, you have access to antiretrovirals. So I'm sure if we found the tools for TB, it will even be much, much easier, I suppose, because antiretrovirals are a little bit of a challenge. I take antiretrovirals. I have to keep it in a fridge, and if you are in Africa, that's not assured. You know? So hopefully the drugs that they will find for TB won't need that. But having said that, this is why I'm a very staunch supporter of finding a vaccine, because once you have a vaccine, you don't have any of those issues arising.
Yes, but I believe that they have been very successful in Zambia in keeping the cost of TB drugs down under $20, which is quite reasonable even under African circumstances.
Yeah, they're actually free. We don't pay for TB drugs. There's an arrangement with the Stop TB Partnership in Geneva. There's something called the Global Drug Facility, which buys these drugs, very high quality drugs, but in bulk, and then ship them to countries that need them, and then the patients get them free. Now, people still die from TB because these drugs are not exactly perfect. Like I said, you have to take them for more than 6 months, and the trouble is that you get well very fast, and you regain your appetite, and if you don't have food and the drugs have side effects, then people stop taking them. But then it doesn't mean that the bacteria is dead, and then it comes back in a form that is more resistant to the first-line drugs. So we have those difficulties of healthcare workers. Many of them have died from AIDS-related tuberculosis, and some others have left the country for better jobs outside.
Tell us more about what you've learned about the nature of the links between HIV, AIDS, and tuberculosis, and on the health community's greater awareness of setting up joint programs to combat both of these afflictions together. How important is that?
Oh, it's very, very important, especially in Africa, where the leading killer of people with HIV is tuberculosis. And basically what that means is, if you see all the statistics that talk about the number of people that have died in Africa from AIDS, and then you factored in TB and said, look, if we could have treated TB, then that would change the picture completely. And this is why it doesn't make any sense to me for anybody in Africa to do AIDS work without putting in TB as a very, very important factor. Because antiretrovirals, you take them forever, for the rest of your life. But if you don't have TB treatment, then you die despite the fact that you're taking antiretrovirals. So put it in another way, to give a concrete example, I had TB in 1997, got cured of TB, and then went on antiretrovirals, and now for more than 10 years I'm still alive. But if I didn't have access to TB services, then I would be dead, like, just like my brothers died, and most likely I would have gone as an AIDS statistic. But now I always challenge people and say, look, you can keep people living with HIV alive by treating tuberculosis. And because it's the leading killer of people living with HIV in Africa, that's a big achievement.
What have you learned from your travels in Asia and other countries around the world about their experiences fighting tuberculosis and HIV together?
Here in the U.S., people living with HIV, TB is not a very big factor as a cause of death, because TB generally attacks people who are in very poor living conditions, crowded places and so on, and poverty. So the experience of people living with HIV in the developed world is different. I've been to Japan a number of times, and even there are people living with HIV, but TB is not one of their concerns. However, in Asia, like India, it's a big thing, and it's not even related to HIV that much, you know, because the levels of HIV in India are not at the same percentage as in Africa, you know. But TB, even without taking HIV into consideration, TB in many, many parts of Asia is just a huge problem that you cannot ignore. But even worse, TB is the only disease that, if left untreated, someone can infect 15 others within a year. So treating it also works as a prevention, so that other people don't catch it.
Which African countries do you think need the most attention and assistance at present in stepping up facilities and getting better treatment and better environmental conditions so that people don't come down with TB?
Well, Zambia is one such country, but the whole of sub-Saharan Africa is in big trouble with tuberculosis. There's a report that says if we could have fought TB effectively in sub-Saharan Africa, we would have easily achieved the Millennium Development Goals, you know. But because Africa is the only continent, sub-Saharan Africa, where actually TB is drawing everybody backwards. In South Africa, it's huge in the mines now, in Mozambique, Malawi, Zimbabwe, all those countries, big TB epidemics.
And what has compelled you to share your story and experiences of such a private struggle with the outside world and the wider public?
Well, my feeling with HIV, with tuberculosis and everything, is that they really don't make sense. I think basically, if you really look at the scheme of things, disease doesn't make much sense. And talking to many people gives meaning to what's going on. Maybe it's my quest to find meaning. If I tell the story and I'm able to mobilize some members of Congress here to ask the U.S. government to give more support to global health issues like AIDS and TB, and maybe somewhere in Africa a baby is saved as a result of that message, then the whole disease makes sense in some way. It's a very weird way of putting it. But I can't just imagine having gone through this and then just keeping it to myself, because I think it would just eat me up. My belief is, okay, am I making sense out of this senseless situation? And somehow that is kind of liberating if you feel it is somehow. And when Mandela said what I was doing was good, then I felt, wow, then it has meaning to it.
Have you noticed an impact that U.S. funding and that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and other such organizations are having in African countries over the past few years in reducing the threat of tuberculosis and AIDS?
Huge. If you removed funding from PEPFAR and you took away Bill Gates and NIH and so on, there would just be like genocide in Africa. When I go back home, the drugs that I take before I change into the new regimen that I'm on now were funded by PEPFAR. There's no doubt. Even in terms of prevention and all sorts of care, I can't even hesitate. They are doing much, much better. In many ways, they do much better than African governments themselves.
And you think that the improved drugs now are starting to reach the hard-to-get places that once were deprived of access to these medications?
Well, at least the first-line drugs, many people can access them in Africa, the first-line AIDS drugs. We still have a problem when you become resistant to the first-line to get the second-line ones or third-line because of issues of patent. The drugs that we take at home often are manufactured by Indian generic companies, and they are much, much cheaper. But the second one, third ones, they still have patents and so on. So that's still kind of a problem. But so far, I think we've been fortunate, or maybe because we don't have the facility to test the resistance. But it seems like many people are doing well. They're still doing well on first-line drugs. It will become very, very complicated. I don't even want to imagine when a lot of people will develop resistance.